I think that's one of the biggest things I see with new investors. Yes. And I was the same way. I would look at comps and say, oh, we can definitely get that amount for this property. Mm-hmm. Push comes to shove, you put it on the market. Maybe if the market's super hot in that particular area, mm-hmm. you might be able to get it. But a lot of times you're having to kind of back off from some of those lofty estimates.
You always want to try to make a deal work. Sometimes you just have to realize that they won't. And I think that's something we've gotten really good at over the years. Yeah. It's just cutting our losses and saying, okay, this is not going to work. Let's get out before we get in too deep.
Welcome to Turning Profit, a podcast for people that love real estate. Learn the business models and skills that professional real estate investors use to make money and build wealth. Visit turningprofit.com for a wealth of investor resources. And now, here are your hosts, Pete and Heather Reese.
Welcome to the Turning Profit podcast. Maddie, it's so great to be here once again.
Thank you. I'm very excited to be here.
Yes. So if you don't know, Maddie is stand-in co-host for today.
Yes.
And she is my daughter, my oldest daughter, mm-hmm. and also involved heavily in all the day-to-day operations of our land investing business.
Yes.
So maybe a good place to start would be, you know, what's your kind of role at the company?
We are calling it now the investment manager.
Okay.
But really what that is I'm just making like the final property level decisions on specific properties. So I'm clearing due diligence, doing everything associated with that, and just making sure that the properties are good to go.
I'm handing off some of my current responsibilities to Maddie. And as I told some of the team, that she is actually way smarter than me in a lot of categories. So they're in good hands. But one thing that we are going to talk about today, the main topic of today's podcast, is we're going to be talking about private money.
Yes.
So private money is a big concept when we're talking about real estate investing. So we're going to talk about how to line up private money for real estate investments, mm-hmm. how to also be a private money lender if you kind of don't want to deal with all the day-to-day things that happen with real estate investing and still kind of benefit from it. And then also talk about equity partnerships as well. Nice. So these are all forms of kind of financing a property for real estate investing. And with land, things are a little bit different than they are if you are fixing and flipping homes. Mm-hmm. There's a lot of established kind of things out there where established kind of hard money lenders, they call it. Basically, companies set up to offer these types of specific loans to real estate investors, to home flippers mostly. With land, things are a little bit different.
Yeah.
There aren't those established companies out there. I know that there are some that are kind of working in the space, but they're not as readily available as definitely in the home flipping side of things.
Yeah.
So put together a little kind of guideline and outline for today. Yeah. And we're going to be going through some of these things, talking about kind of the typical loans that we do as a company, and kind of what it's all about and how it normally works. So
awesome.
I think it'll be pretty informative.
Yeah.
And then at the end, if you stay till the end, we have cherry picked some questions from our land investing community called Land Conquest. Mm-hmm. So that is Land Conquest is hosted on the school platform. Mm-hmm. And we'd love to see you over there if you are interested in the land investing space.
Yeah, it's a lot of good conversation happening in there. Some good questions and then good answers from other community members.
Yeah, it's built up quite a community now.
Yeah.
I think there's about 4,600 members and this community is getting close to 2 years.
Wow. It doesn't feel like that long, but also it does.
Yeah.
At the same time.
Yeah, we kind of jumped on the school platform early.
Yeah.
There's been a huge, I don't know what you call it, a huge
deluge.
Uh-huh. Yes. different community joining on that platform, but we've been there for a while and love it, actually.
Yeah. So that's one of my favorites.
So yeah, we hope you check it out. Oh, to find it, just simply go to school, which is skool.com/landconquest. And we've actually put it below in the description. And if you're watching this on YouTube, we put it right below the video here. Okay, so we are talking about putting together deals with private money.
Yeah.
So first of all, I guess a great place to start would be, what is private money?
Yeah.
So you want me to handle this, Maddie?
Okay. I mean, you're the expert.
Oh, okay. All right. My definition is, which I just came up with on the back of a napkin here, is borrowing money from private individuals in order to complete a real estate transaction.
Yeah.
Pretty simple.
Oh,
yeah.
Wow.
Basically, you're not using a bank.
Yeah.
You're instead lining this up individually with private individuals or maybe a company or fund or something like that in order to get the deal done. As an investor, you'll be looking to borrow money from private individuals in order to purchase these investment properties. Exactly. Like I said, there aren't a lot of established companies out there kind of doing this. And maybe that's a potential opportunity for some established companies that are in the home flipping space to actually get into the land flipping space as well.
Yeah. But I think really for private individuals, it's such a good opportunity to just get in on this because returns are great.
Yeah. I mean, typically we're paying 12 to 15% depending on the deal and a lot of different factors on the money. And the thing is, with all of our deals, we're trying to buy them at 50% of what we think we can resell them for. Mm-hmm. So secured by a first mortgage on these properties. Mm-hmm. So we're not putting you in second position or anything like that. And so I feel like it's a pretty secured investment as far as that goes. Mm-hmm. So as I mentioned, you know, we typically pay 12 to 15%, and that's kind of pretty common in this space, you know, talking to other investors. Yeah. To me, this is what seems, you know, like a win-win for both sides. And it you know, kind of compensates the private lender a little bit for, you know, sort of out of the ordinary risk associated with land deals, I guess you could say. But from our point of view, we try to de-risk it as much as possible.
Oh, yeah.
So maybe we go off on that little tangent, first of all. Like, what are some things that we do to de-risk our purchases?
Firstly, we do an extensive due diligence process, just analyzing the property kind of from our screens. Then we have boots on the ground who physically go to the property, typically like a photographer. And then we also always list with an agent or broker in the area who knows the area and can give us a great estimation of value that they think it will actually sell for.
Right.
So we're buying it at a price that we know is safe.
Or we're fairly confident that it's safe. I mean, I guess you never really know till a property hits the market.
Exactly.
But yeah, we've been doing this for a while now, hundreds of transactions, and we feel like we've got a pretty good handle on things. And you know, we're actually learning from each and every deal that we do.
Yeah.
And it's additional information for us to kind of do better the next time. Mm-hmm. And one other aspect of the due diligence, which I feel like it's pretty important, is we're buying all these properties through a closing company.
Exactly. You know,
and getting a title report.
Yes.
So we're making sure the title is clean. And there are no issues with that. So sometimes random things pop up on those title reports. And
you wouldn't expect.
Yeah. So if you're doing a private transaction between the landowner and yourself, you're really,
say you're inviting more risk than you should be.
Yes. You're rolling the dice.
Exactly.
Okay, that was a term I was looking for. Rolling the dice, and you're hoping everything's going to be okay, which is not a good strategy as an investor.
Yeah.
I've noticed over time, and this is really, my opinion has really been shaped on this over time, is that the professional investors are the ones that are putting in a lot of effort into their due diligence on the properties. Uh-huh. You know, to continue kind of down this tangent, like over time, we've had to cancel on a lot of, you know, potential deals because of things that we dug up during our due diligence process.
Exactly.
Mm-hmm. And if we didn't have an extensive due diligence process, we would have likely bought those properties and then
lost a lot of money.
found out some of the problems after we bought them.
Yes,
so we had to try to determine those things before we buy the properties this time. So,
and I would say another thing that kind of makes us more unique is we are always pretty conservative on the pricing for these properties. So we try to do 50% of a quick close pricing. Mm-hmm. So not if you put it on the market and you wait for a year for the perfect buyer. We want to do 50% of quick close pricing. And even then, sometimes we're trying to push it a little lower because we want to make sure that everyone's covered.
And the thing is with land, there are no perfect, you know, it's rare to have perfect comps, especially if you're dealing in larger rural type properties. So it's kind of an art to figuring out what these things are worth. You take information from all sides, the broker, the on-site inspection, our due diligence, the title report, and you're kind of coming up with a reasonable value, which you think you can get for the property.
Yep.
So, and sometimes we don't even hit that reasonable value that we think we can get.
Yep.
And the market kind of determines what the actual value is.
Exactly. It pays to be conservative.
Yeah, honest. That's right. And if you sell it for more than what you thought, then that's bonus. Right.
Yeah, exactly.
Yes. But it's never a good idea to get into a deal just because you're trying to be overly optimistic and push what you think you can resell it for.
Exactly.
I think that's one of the biggest things I see with new investors.
Yes.
And I was the same way.
Yeah.
I would look at comps and say, oh, we can definitely get that amount for this property. Mm-hmm. Push comes to shove, you put it on the market. I mean, maybe if the market's super hot in that particular area, you might be able to get it. But a lot of times you're having to kind of back off from some of those lofty estimates.
Exactly. You always, the new investors, it's hard because you always want to try to make a deal work.
Right.
But sometimes you just have to realize that they won't. And I think that's something we've gotten really good at over the years, is just cutting our losses and saying, okay, this is not going to work. Let's get out before we get in too deep.
Hey everyone, just a quick reminder that you can join our community for free at landconquest.com. Inside, you'll get all the resources, training, and support for building a thriving land flipping business. Once again, that's landconquest.com. All right, enjoy the rest of the show. Okay, so 12 to 15% is pretty common in this space. That's what we pay generally. Term, you know, generally we do our terms at 12 months. I know some investors do terms of 6 months, but 12 months gives generally enough time to get these properties resold. Yeah. You know, we're trying to sell them much quicker than that. Yes. But you always plan for those contingencies. And certain properties we know are actually going to take a little bit longer. So we try to set that up from the beginning that, hey, this property could be, you know, a 12 to 24 month hold. Maybe we're splitting it up and we're selling off a bunch of parcels or something like that. So we try to match the term to the deal itself.
Yeah.
And then security. It's a first mortgage, and it's a, you know, depending on the state, it's a deed of trust or mortgage. And then there's also a note involved with that, and the note pretty much spells out exactly what the payment terms are and the intricacies of the deal. So
makes sense.
Kind of on our deals, you know, there's a number of different things to consider. Kind of the deals that we do, common structure we use, you know, say for instance, it would be 12% interest only, 2 points origination fee. Now what that means is that we actually pay a fee to the lender for origination of that mortgage. So say, for instance, we're borrowing $300,000 against this property. 2 points on that would be an additional $6,000 payment. So that $6,000 goes directly to the lender. That could obviously be built into the loan amount, so they could earn interest on that, or that could be paid at closing. So we've done both. And then the maturity of 12 months, first position, security. And most of these deals that we're doing, you know, we're buying them at such a steep discount that we are doing a zero down payment. But, you know, for some deals, you know, some bigger deals or something like that, that potentially is seen as a higher risk or whatever, we'll do a down payment here and there if it warrants it. Other details, you know, you could structure these things however you want.
Yeah, that's true.
So this is just, that's just kind of the common structure that we do. And you could be doing all kinds of variations on these things. Like for instance, we let the interest accrue. So it's interest only loans, but we're not making a monthly interest payment to the investor. Most of the investors don't want us to be sending them, you know, $400 or $500 every month. You know, it's bookkeeping for them, bookkeeping for us. It's generally what happens is we let the interest accrue. And then when it's time to pay off that loan, then there is a payoff that's figured out. There's a ton of online calculators where you can figure that out.
Nice.
And it gets paid off, you know, as we resell the property. That's one thing. You know, you could structure it that you're making payments to the lender on a monthly basis or quarterly basis. You could do all kinds of things. Also, prepayment penalty. We don't have any prepayment penalties in any of our loans, but potentially there would be a situation where the lender, the investor, wants to have their money working for them. Say they're anticipating having their money working for them for a year. If we pay it off in 6 months or something like that, there could be, you know, we could potentially negotiate a fee that they get compensated for getting paid off early. So that's something we don't normally do, but on a case-by-case basis, we would definitely consider it. The other thing to consider is like what amount of the purchase price is being borrowed. Are you borrowing 100% of everything? Are you borrowing 80%, 70%, 50%? You know, what is that deal? And obviously, the risk changes for the lender and for you, you know, depending on the down payment amount. You know, so that changes things a little bit. That's, I guess, the main thing. One of the questions that I get sometimes is like, how can we get a zero down payment? You know, like that sounds like, you know, not a lot of lenders would want to do that. And it really comes down to our track record. So, you know, like any of our lenders that have ever asked for it, I'm like, hey, I'll show you all of our transactions, numbers of all of our deals. I'll send you a spreadsheet so you can see exactly what happened in every single one of these deals. And you can see that it's very rare that we lose any money on any deals. And anytime we do, it's a very, very minuscule amount. If there ever was a situation where we were short in order to resell a property, then we would make up any of that difference. So
that transparency is really, really helpful when it comes to kind of a lot of aspects of this business, but especially when it comes to gaining that trust.
That's the other thing that's really important to me, is to be able to kind of just be out there with any of our stuff. Yeah. When we're talking to a potential lender mm-hmm. about doing a deal, I send them everything. You know, yeah. I send them all of our due diligence, mm-hmm. like links to all the photos, links, you know, like the broker opinion, you yeah. know, like exactly what the broker said about the property, what my thoughts are on the property, mm-hmm. title commitment, like all this stuff.
Everything
so, yeah. yeah. So, you know, they feel comfortable that we've done our research yeah. and obviously then they can look into the deal itself and
exactly.
comps and all this stuff and, uh-huh. and try to determine if they're comfortable with it as well.
Yeah.
I have a number of different private lenders that I work with. And, you know, I have some that are really interested in looking through all the due diligence and mm-hmm. they really understand land and,
yeah.
and everything. And then others are not as interested in that and, mm-hmm. and more just trust us and what we're doing yeah. in our process and
exactly.
everything like that. So to get back to that question, how can we get a zero down payment mm-hmm. track record generally?
Yeah.
And or maybe in a certain case, maybe you don't have a great track record mm-hmm. yet, but maybe you have, maybe you know this person that's lending you the money
exactly.
and they know that you're good for it and mm-hmm. something like that would
yeah.
give them some more comfort. So.
Yeah, exactly. So there are various different ways you can negotiate it.
But yeah.
I think track record is the easiest one. It takes a little time
well,
to prove.
Yeah, it does. that's the problem. That's the problem. How do you find private lenders? This is something that comes up. Networking
yeah.
is one of the things, like knowing people in person mm-hmm. or knowing a friend of a friend,
mm-hmm.
you know, having a good track record of doing what you say you're going to do
mm-hmm.
and, you know, being someone that is trustworthy
exactly.
is going to help you a lot in these situations.
And it really isn't even being trustworthy in business. If you're a trustworthy person in your personal life too, that is, I think, a big deal.
Right.
Because if you gain
it translates.
That trust, it translates. Exactly.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I guess one piece of advice is do what you say you're going to do.
Yeah.
And mm-hmm. also, you know, deal with everyone ethically.
Exactly.
You know, don't try to always get the better of a situation
yeah.
with someone.
Uh-uh.
You know, really think of things from their perspective and try to be fair and even in all
yeah.
your dealings.
It's the good thing to do, first of all, but also it pays itself back.
That's right. That's
so
right.
It's a win-win-win.
That's right. Obviously, you know, maybe have a rich uncle.
Exactly.
That rich uncle is something that always comes up. But, you know, maybe you do have family members mm-hmm. or close friends or friends of friends that you know are mm-hmm. looking for opportunities, looking for ways to get better returns on
yeah.
their investment. You know, the cool thing about this is that it's kind of a defined rate of return mm-hmm. for a private lender.
Yeah.
You know, they might have stock market investments mm-hmm. or they may have investments or something else, some longer term investments or something like that, where the return is kind of unknown
yeah.
at this point. This is kind of a known return
exactly.
Specifically. So it gives some people some peace of mind. And I really feel like investing in these properties when we are truly buying them for 50% of mm-hmm. what we can resell them for,
yeah.
I personally feel like it's a pretty low risk thing
yeah.
From their perspective, mm-hmm. especially when you have a situation like with us, where if there mm-hmm. ever was any like shortage or something like that, we had to sell it for less than mm-hmm. what we borrowed against the property or something like that, then I would make up any of those differences in order to make sure my lender gets what they, mm-hmm. that they were supposed to get.
Yeah.
So networking. Oh,
yes.
Telling everyone what you do.
Exactly.
Yeah.
yeah.
Talking about it.
Mm-hmm. At the gym, you meet someone at a restaurant.
Yeah.
Walking your dog.
Walking your dog. Yes.
I mean, I guess depending where you're walking your dog, but.
You could just go up to random people at the mall.
Yeah, exactly.
And talk to them about it.
Hello.
You can wear a shirt that says, yeah. I buy land.
Huh.
You know?
I wonder who has a shirt like that.
You know, the funny thing is, yeah, Maddie has a shirt that says, I buy haunted houses.
Yeah.
I think it's pretty funny. But the funny thing is that I know investors that do that type mm-hmm. of thing. They have a hat that says, you know,
yeah.
like, I buy land or I buy houses or something like that. And they are shocked because that brings a lot of people asking them like
yeah.
what they do. Like,
uh-huh.
oh, tell me about it. I want to get into that. Or,
yeah,
you know,
it's
like,
interesting.
Yes.
It gets people, it piques their interest and then you get to talking with them and then things go from there.
Make a lot of connections. And
yeah.
obviously on social media, you can be talking about what you're doing
mm-hmm.
and maybe highlighting some of your investments and things.
Exactly.
And then every once in a while, you could say, hey, you know, if anyone's ever interested in lending money on any of these deals for 12 to 15%,
mm-hmm.
you know, just reach out to me. Are you looking to scale your land flipping business quickly? Well, we're happy to present our new cutting-edge system built specifically for land flippers. Take a look at the Land Conquest Business System today, and you'll gain full access to a customizable pre-made website, CRM, dedicated phone numbers, text automations, 24/7 support, and more. It's basically a business in the box. Go to software.landconquest.com to learn more.
So, Speaking of.
No, yes. Yep. But yeah, so that's the thing. Like, you got to be mentioning that every once in a while. Mm-hmm. You got to be talking about what you do so people understand it. Mm-hmm. And, you know, all these, one thing leads to another. You may be talking to someone that doesn't have extra money to lend, but then they know someone, their parents or something like that,
exactly,
that are looking for investments. So, mm-hmm.
And if they're confident in what you do because you've explained it to them, they're more comfortable recommending it to other people.
I mean, the business really, if you really break it down to people, it's very understandable, I guess it is.
Yeah,
so,
it is.
Yeah, there's nothing about it that's overly complicated. I mean, you're buying properties at a deep discount, mm-hmm, and then you are sometimes doing some things to these properties to improve the value a little bit, and then reselling them. Pretty straightforward.
It gets complicated when you actually go into it, but just explaining it to someone,
On the surface, it's really not that, it's not rocket science, I guess you could say. Mm-hmm. That's how you find private lenders. Mm-hmm. You get to the point where you're actually doing a lot of deals and things like that, mm-hmm, then private lenders will start seeking you out in a lot of situations.
Yeah.
A lot of private lenders actually use self-directed IRAs or self-directed 401ks. Mm-hmm. So that's kind of a common way that a lot of them are looking for places to put their money to get a better return. The stock market, you know, that's kind of the default for a lot of people, mm-hmm, put in the stock market, you know, maybe over time, you're averaging 9-10%. I don't know what the latest is,
but
those are ups and downs too.
Exactly.
So, 1 year could be down 20%. The next year could be up 30%. Mm-hmm. You know, like, so these are fluctuations that you don't really have to worry about as much when you are getting into the kind of being a private lender, because you've got that defined rate of return. You get your principal back. You get the interest. You also get the points. So there's it's a pretty worthwhile investment from that perspective, mm-hmm, I think. And also, too, it's kind of a good way to balance out your portfolio a little bit. Say you've got a certain percentage in stocks. And,
mm-hmm. You never want to have all your eggs in one basket.
That's right. You can kind of have a portion set aside to do some of these real estate lending type things as well. So I hear of a lot of people doing that. And then another way in order to kind of finance your land would be equity partnerships. Mm-hmm. So equity partnerships are a little bit different. You're not actually taking on a lender, but you are taking on a partner. Mm-hmm. So the partner still brings the money, that, and they are an equity partner, meaning they own a certain percentage of that property, mm-hmm, meaning that they will actually get a certain percentage of the profits as well. So a lot of these equity relationships are the money side will get 50%, mm-hmm, and the investor will get 50%.
Yeah.
So it's an even split. The investor, mm-hmm, you know, may do all the work, the legwork to get the find the deal and to get the deal done and resold and all that stuff. And then the money partner simply is bringing the money and then sharing in the profits. So kind of a win-win deal there as well. So we actually have a defined program set up. It's called Partner with Pete.
Yes.
And it's just go to partnerwithpete.com. Mm-hmm. And basically what we do is we become your money partner. Mm-hmm. We bring the money to actually close on the deal, but we take it a step further than these standard relationships. Yeah. We kind of take over the deal from that point forward, meaning we'll leverage our team to handle everything.
Mm-hmm.
So we'll do all the due diligence. We'll pay for any improvements on the property.
Yeah.
We will find an agent to resell the property for us, negotiate the deal, handle the transactions on the purchase and resale side. And for a standard land flip deal, we do 50-50 split. So when it resells, then you get 50% of the profits.
Exactly. And I think it's a really unique program. I haven't seen anyone else doing it like we do. And it's also, I think, just a really win-win situation for both sides. And I think that's really kind of special.
You know, over the last year, we have paid out about $1 million in partner profits.
Wow.
In the deals that we've done through the Partner with Pete program.
That's amazing.
Yeah. So a lot of money. Uh-huh. A lot of money.
And we have
out
more
there
in the pipeline for
this
year,
we have a lot
too.
More in the pipeline. A lot more in the pipeline.
Yeah, that's really awesome.
So, So if you have a deal, if you're an investor and you have a deal, simply go to partnerwithpete.com.
Yep.
You'll see kind of our standard criteria on there for a deal. We don't take like super small deals where each side is really not making much.
Yeah.
And there's some other criteria we have as well. But if you feel like your property matches that, then simply fill out that form and then the team gets it right away, starts evaluating it, and we'll let you know if we can, if we think it's a deal also. And, and if so, then we'll partner on it and
take it from there.
Yeah, take it from there. And then one final thing about equity partnerships is we actually do that sometimes on some of our large deals. We've done it a couple of times in the past. We're getting into some larger multi-million dollar properties. Some of these things are kind of best structured as a partnership. So we're kind of open to that as well for some of these larger deals. If you are a lender or a potential money partner that want to partner on some of our internal deals, then definitely reach out to us. We actually have a page set up on our website. It's at lender.turningprofit.com. It's just a quick basic questionnaire. And then after that, it'll allow you to set up a Google Meet call with me. And we can kind of go over if the lending or potential equity partnerships could be a good fit. So if you've got extra funds laying around and you're looking to get a really solid return on them, then go check out that form, lender.turningprofit.com, and then we'll connect and see if there's a good fit.
Yeah. So, also, if you know anyone who is looking for that,
send them
our way.
Yeah, that's right. Great point, Maddie. Great point. That's about it. You know, just we're always looking for additional lenders. We're always looking for great people to work with on that. Check us out if you think that could be a good fit. Now, if you are an investor yourself, you're looking to kind of get into this private lending world, meaning get private lenders for your deals, you know, then really the best thing to do is to be putting yourself out there.
Yeah.
Making sure that you build up a track record and, you know, connecting with as many people as possible. You're not going to find lenders if you're just not putting yourself out there, if you're not meeting people, you're not doing any of that stuff. It's just not going to come to you. You have to kind of make an effort, take those steps to make it happen.
And let it be known to people that that's what you're looking for. Because if they don't know, they're not going to just be like, oh, do you have any deals I could partner on?
I guess the next thing would be to transition to our question segment of the podcast. And I sent over some questions to Maddie already, and I cherry-picked these from the Land Conquest community. She's going to read off the questions. I'll do my best. We'll do our best to answer the questions and go from there.
Got some good ones this week.
Okay.
Not that they aren't good every week. They're good this week, too. Okay, first one. This is from Colby. If a property has almost all 100-year flood zone, will you even bother with it?
Yes.
Yeah.
Depending.
Yeah, exactly.
Sometimes.
Yeah, sometimes.
So it really depends. You know, certain areas, you find this a lot in coastal areas where the whole coastal area is considered flood zone.
Yeah.
So FEMA flood zone, meaning that when it rains real hard, that it will flood.
Yeah.
So you ever driven by some of these coastal areas and all the homes are on stilts?
Exactly.
Those are flood zone areas. But those are also pretty valuable pieces of land as well.
Exactly.
So there's kind of a caveat to that. Like if you are looking at a piece of property and the flood zone is unusual for that area, I'd probably stay away from it. If it's a large rural acreage or something like that, has some flood zone on it, it's very common. I mean, most of those properties have something like that.
Yeah.
If there's a stream, there's any sort of water runoff or something like that, those areas are all going to be FEMA flood zone normally. But if it's a building lot, you know, like maybe a smaller property in an area where none of the other buildable properties have that on it, I'd probably stay away from it.
Exactly.
Yeah.
Yeah. That's kind of exactly how we look at it when we're evaluating these. Is first, is it typical for the area? And if it is, then we kind of almost disregard it. But if it's not typical, then we definitely take that into consideration when we're comping. All right. Next question. Is it best to get deals with owners who are selling through real estate agents or for sale by owner?
I guess it really doesn't matter. It really just depends on the deal.
Exactly.
So I really don't care where the deal comes from, if it was on the market, off the market, any of these things. I simply need to know that it's an actual deal, meaning can we buy this property? Can we resell it for twice what we're paying for it?
Yeah.
Do you have a great deal under contract? Well, submit it to partnerwithpete.com. The Partner with Pete program is a deal funding program where we will actually use our funds to complete the purchase of the property. We will do every other step of the process, including the due diligence, the transaction side, the marketing side, and the transaction on the resale side. And when all the dust settles, We will split the profits 50-50. There is no downside for you as an investor, only upside. So once again, go to partnerwithpete.com, submit your deal there, and let's get it funded.
And that could be just typically if they're on the market, it's not a simple flip. There's some sort of value add. It could be subdivision, could be something else. So that's typically what we look for. But if it's just brought to us and it has never been listed and the price is right, then.
Yeah, like you said, it's pretty rare to find deals where it's just we don't have to do anything to the property, resell it for twice of what we pay for it if it's an on the market situation. Mm-hmm. Now, the caveat to that would be sometimes people need liquidity, meaning they need to sell quickly for cash.
Exactly.
They know that they're not getting top dollar for the property, but you are able to solve their problem, which is to get them cash quickly. Mm-hmm. And sometimes they're less concerned about, you know, getting top dollar. They just want to move on. They need the cash for some other investment or something else. And they're happy to do that. So we have done some deals like that, but it is more rare.
Yeah.
Like a lot of times we're finding, you know, the on-market deals that we're getting are ones where we are creating some value.
Yep.
Most typical thing that we're doing to create value would be a minor subdivision.
Yep.
So we're taking like a large property, say it's 100 acres, splitting it up into 5 20-acre properties and then reselling it. And we do that because the smaller properties, you can generally get a higher price per acre than you can if you're just selling one large piece of property. And,
exactly. And
I think the big reason for that a lot of times is the fact that there's very few buyers out there, very few competitive properties that are that large.
Exactly.
So, you know.
Yeah. Land with power lines. Anybody have experience comping property with a power line tower on it?
We have a lot of properties that seem like we buy and sell
very often. Yeah.
With power lines. A lot of rural properties have that. So it's not a deal killer by any means.
No.
It's something that should be considered in the projected resale price. Mm-hmm. You know, we just do, you know, on a case by case basis. It's hard to say how much of the land is impacted. Like, is it cutting through just one corner? Is it like the back edge of the property, or is it dividing the property in two? Mm-hmm. See, all these things kind of affect the value of the property in a different way.
Exactly.
So it does affect the value, but you probably have to take it on a case-by-case basis to see. And a lot of times you can really lean on the local agents or brokers you're dealing with to kind of tell you their thoughts on it as well.
Yeah. And I will say, like you were saying, it's kind of a case-by-case basis. So if it's like a small, purely residential piece of property and it's almost entirely covered up by these transmission lines and you have like a very tiny little portion that's left to potentially build on, that's going to be a very different scenario than a large rural property with some crisscrossing power lines going through it.
That's a great point. And we've seen those come in a lot, probably because people have a hard time selling them and they just want to get rid of them. But yeah, we have seen those like small properties.
Yeah.
90% of the property is taken up by these big power lines. And, you know, you're not, even if you could physically fit a house in that other area, and not many people are going to want to build a house there next to these huge transmission lines.
Exactly. And I see people, investors bringing in these deals and kind of comparing those lots to ones without the power lines on them and thinking that it's a great deal. So you kind of have to take these things into consideration because that will greatly affect the value if it's a situation like that.
I always like to think about, like, really just think from the end buyer's perspective. Yeah. Hey, I'm going, I'm looking at this property and I look up and I see these huge power lines. I mean, there's going to be a very small percentage of people that would be okay with building their house there.
Uh-huh. And they'd want a significant discount, most likely.
The discount so far that you may not even make any money.
Oh, yeah.
And it's going to take forever to sell.
Exactly.
Yep.
Because you have to find that one perfect person.
Which they don't come along very often. Because we've bought a lot of properties with various problems and things and thinking they're not as big of a deal as they are. But every time we do something like that, we kind of like kick ourselves because it's you know, it's a big deal to the end buyer.
Mm-hmm. That's stuff with trying to force that deal.
Yeah, forcing the deal. Mm-hmm. Yep. And the other thing is, too, that not all power lines are the same. You know, you've got sometimes of these wooden power line telephone pole type things that are cutting through a property. That's not as big of a deal as these giant transmission, like regional transmission lines that are these big, huge metal towers with like, you know.
Exactly.
I mean, those are pretty.
Yeah. Very different situations.
Yeah, definitely. So try to determine on the satellite images what you got there.
Yeah. If you use Land ID too, you can actually do the transmission lines overlay and see if it shows up on that. And then you can click it and see like the voltage and everything, which is a cool little tip. Okay. Next question. Pipeline easements. So it's kind of similar in a way. I have a great potential 40-acre subdivide. There are one or two pipeline easements on the property, according to the owner. One of them may not be active anymore. Are pipeline easements a deal killer, or does it just depend on the location of the line through the property? Thanks.
Not a deal killer. It does depend on the location.
Yep.
You know, sometimes some of these easements are more restrictive than others. Mm-hmm. Typically, you're going to have some sort of setback. If you're going to build on the property, yeah, you're going to have some sort of setback from these easements. The other thing that's important is that even though if it's an underground pipeline, you don't see anything on the surface. You may see like a kind of moat area through, you know, where this pipeline is or something like that. But you're never able to actually build on top of that.
Yeah.
Each agreement's a little bit different. Sometimes you could put a driveway over that. Mm-hmm. Sometimes you can, you know, have animals and grazing over that. Sometimes you can plant some crops or like all kinds of things. Yeah. Each agreement is different. Sometimes you can't do anything. You can't even touch it. And you're not even supposed to like really cross it or anything like that. So look at the agreement. You can find that out generally through the title report.
Yep.
Each situation is a little bit different. So again, it's kind of like with the power lines. You kind of have to evaluate the situation. Hopefully bring in your local broker.
Yeah.
Get their perspective on it, because they're going to know from a buyer's perspective, like, hey, these are the questions, these are the things buyers are going to have a problem with. And you know, they've potentially sold properties like that in the past. And
exactly.
How did it go?
Mm-hmm. So. And then touching on location again, if it's cutting off a huge chunk of the property, that's a big thing. But also you have to take into consideration if it's a potential buildable lot, maybe the ideal home site is cut off by that that easement. And so you want to kind of, again, put yourself in the end buyer's shoes and say, okay, well, if I was going to build on this property, am I still able to with these utility easements running through?
Yeah.
And I have to take all things into consideration.
That's right. You know, it's kind of an art with trying to determine what these properties are worth.
Yep.
An art and a science. You know, you're taking actual data. Mm. You're taking a lot of different variables in. It's not as clean cut as, you know, homes, single family homes in a suburban area where every home's the same. Mm-hmm. You know, it's really different. Many of these properties are different in many ways. There's a lot of different variables.
Yeah.
So it's a... you know, it's a lot of things to keep track of, but it's balancing those different, you know, pros and cons and, and coming up with the value that's reasonable. Mm-hmm. So, and always, like you said, stay on the conservative side.
Exactly. And it kind of may seem daunting to approach that and say, okay, well, I have to take all of these things into consideration, but it becomes kind of like second nature.
Yes.
After a little while. We always say that one of the most important things you can do as a land investor is get really good at evaluating land. And that comes through repetition. You just have to keep doing it, and eventually it will not seem as big of a deal as you initially thought.
Yep. Just like you're doing, you know, if you're into sports, if trying to get better at a particular sport, you know, you'll get better with reps.
Yep.
It's the same thing with this. You know, you'll get better the more you do it and the more you're exposed to it. And then another world will unlock for you of opportunity.
Yeah.
When you really understand how to evaluate these properties.
Yeah. Pretty cool.
Yeah. So I guess that about wraps it up for today.
Nice.
Great episode, Maddie. I appreciate you joining. We're going to try to have you on the podcast a little bit more.
Yeah, sounds good to me.
So if you're available in your schedule, I don't know.
I guess I'll make time.
Okay. All right. Well, thanks everyone for watching.
Again,
go to lender.turningprofit.com in order to check out our lending opportunities. And then as well, check out our school community, which is school.com/landconquest. So guess that's about it.
All right.
Thanks, everyone.
Thank you.
All right.
Ready to start turning profit yourself? Head to turningprofit.com to step up your real estate investing game. See you on the next episode.